Nice to meet you. Where are you from? Oh, you'll interview.
He's my son.
Oh, okay.
So anyway, we have a comedian in here. It's the microphone. And welcome everybody. We're dealing with Senate File 1589. It's about 4:40, and we're at May 9th, 2013, and we have a quorum present. Today, we're going to hear a presentation on Article 7, which deals with Senator Pappas, Senate File 1534, and it's the Compensation Council and the recommendations that they made. And with us today is Chairman Tom Frazier and Member Bob Shorter, appointee of the Supreme Court from the Compensation Council, and they're here to give testimony and answer any questions that we may have. So, but before we start, Madam Chair, you have a new member. You want to help us know him better?
Representative Purcell was the House of Representatives endorsed the membership of Representative Purcell to this Conference Committee just today, and he replaces Representative Bernardi, who I assume is taking Metro Transit or something like that in transportation. So we welcome Representative Purcell. Would you introduce yourself, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senator Saxog. Chair Saxog, I'm John Purcell of North Central Minnesota, District 5A, and glad to be on board.
And we did talk a little bit about the fact that we are well represented on the U.S. Highway 2 corridor now, Duluth, Grand Rapids, and Bemidji, so for what that's worth. That and a nickel will get you a cup of coffee.
Yeah, okay. Senate District 40 is well represented, too.
It is, no question. Okay, well, I'll turn this over to Chair Frazier, and we've got some information in front of us, so, and anybody has any questions, let's just keep this pretty open. Chair Frazier.
Thank you. Good afternoon, and thank you for inviting me to testify here today. My name again is Tom Frazier. I was appointed to the Compensation Council by Chief Justice Lori Gilday of the Minnesota Supreme Court, and I was elected by the council as its chair. With me today is Bob Schroeder, who was also appointed to the council by the Chief Justice. In fact, my testimony here today was jointly prepared by Mr. Schroeder and myself because we were unsure who would be available to testify at the time you were able to meet. And we also have here Jim Lee from Management and Budget and Greg Hubinger from the Legislative Commission as our support people. The Compensation Council is formed in accordance with Section 15A.082 of the Minnesota Statutes, and it's made up of 16 individuals, three each from the House and Senate, two appointed by the Chief Justice, and eight appointed by Governor Dayton. The appointees included both Republicans and Democrats. I think it's significant that 10 of the 16 members are citizen volunteers, the other six were legislators. The purpose of the council is to make recommendations to the legislature on salaries for members of all three branches of government, the legislature, the constitutional officers, the executive branch agency heads, and judges, all in accordance with criteria set forth in the statute. We met in February and March of this year, completed our work, and provided a recommendation to all three branches of government on March 11, 2013. Article 7 of Senate File 1589 contains the recommendations of the Compensation Council as well as a recommendation for a change in future council membership. I should point out that the House Companion Bill that's before this committee does contain some provisions regarding the timing of Compensation Council appointments and the Council's deadline. These House provisions were not discussed by the Council. Neither the House nor Senate bills before this committee include the Council's recommendations regarding the judiciary, which are contained separately in the Judiciary Finance Committee, committees of the House and Senate, which are also currently in conference. On behalf of the Council, we ask that you give strong support for the judicial recommendations included in this other legislation and specifically in the Senate version which adopts the Council's recommendation. The overarching principle for the Council's work was to consider what it would take to attract and retain the best there is to serve as leaders in each branch of our government. We conducted hearings, we obtained research, and we heard testimony before making our recommendations. For the purposes of this bill, which deals with the executive branch and legislature only, the Council's recommendations are as follows. First, for the governor. The governor's salary is a starting point for these recommendations. There's really no marketplace or national competition for governors, but for what it's worth, the Council looked at the research and found that the governor's current salary ranks 32nd in the nation at $120,000 per year. And it's important to note that the governor's salary has not been increased since 1998, in other words, in 15 years. Considering this, the Council recommends that the governor's salary be increased by 3% in January 2015 and another 3% in the following year. The Senate committees improved on our work and added that the salary should be increased according to the Consumer Price Index from that point forward. The governor's salary has far-reaching consequences throughout the entire executive branch because, as will be seen in a moment, the governor's salary serves as a cap or a marker on both constitutional officers and agency heads, which in turn serve as a cap on management employees in that agency. The other constitutional officer salaries would continue to be based off the governor's salary per our recommendations in accordance with existing statute, so they would increase by 3% and would also be tied to the CPI as outlined above. Mr. Shorter did some research and found that in terms of compensation, all of our constitutional officers rank in the bottom half in the nation on compensation measures. The highest ranking, interestingly, is 27th, and that's for our Secretary of State. Let me turn now to agency heads. When it came to establishing recommendations for salary ranges for state agency heads, our statutory obligation was to consider the competitive forces of the private sector where, unlike in the case of elected officials, there actually is a marketplace for the skills and abilities needed to lead the large, complex enterprises of our state agencies. We heard testimony from the private sector people who interact with government officials. They spoke in favor of increases, even though it gives them a competitive recruiting advantage to have lower salaries in government. They actually spoke in favor of increases because of the importance of having high caliber, adequately compensated public officials who can address the complex issues and complex projects that they bring to these agencies and provide the experience and continuity that they need in government officials as compared to the alternative, which is to have short-term professionals who are in government for a short amount of time and then leave for the private sector. You lose that experience and continuity that's so important. And likewise, we heard from agency commissioners about the challenge of recruiting and retaining professionals for the second-tier management slots. This is especially true for our largest agencies where the marketplace for talent is especially competitive. While it's easy to imagine this challenge for an agency like the Department of Human Services, one of the overlooked examples is a housing finance agency where we heard testimony that they seek individuals with sophisticated banking experience. And they said it's very hard to attract folks with those credentials when they're comparing a $100,000 salary against a much more lucrative opportunity in banking. On a personal note, when some people found out that I was on this compensation council, they spontaneously told me that they were having trouble recruiting people into their agencies. And those agencies are Public Utilities Commission and Department of Economic Development. I saw them outside of the council hearings. They came up to me and volunteered that. So we heard that not only in the hearings, but outside the hearings. These hearings were public hearings, but despite that, it's significant to us that we did not hear any public testimony from any individuals or organizations that were opposed to these increases that we're recommending, and no testimony against any of the council's recommendations. The current law sets a salary limit of most commissioners at 95% of the governor's salary, which is noted above, hasn't changed in 15 years. This has had a debilitating impact on our state's ability to attract top quality employees as a result of the state statute that requires the salary of the agency head to be a cap on the salaries for all of the management employees in that agency. These limits are problematic for our state agencies as an employer for three separate reasons. The first reason is that salaries of commissioners are often less than those of the managers of local government agencies who are carrying out that state agency's programs. As a result, top state managers can move to local governments and receive substantial improvements in compensation. So let me step back and put this in other words. You have public officials in government who are making policy at the state level, but find that they can actually make more money if they go to local government agencies and implement that policy. That's backwards. The second reason is that although agency head salaries have not changed in 15 years, because salaries of other employees have continued to increase over time, many staff earn salaries that are little different from those of their commissioner. In other words, there's compression. People are up bumping against the cap of the commissioner's salary. The third reason is that because agency heads have different salary limits, you have the awkward situation where an employee in a small agency may be performing the same work as an employee in a larger agency but have a lower salary limit because of the different cap that applies to those employees. The council also understood the reality of our current agency appointment process. Governors make political appointments at the commissioner level. Because they are term limited, it serves the public's continuity interest to have high caliber individuals in the non-political positions under them. Given the scale and scope of agency head responsibilities and the limited time and resources available to the council, the council's recommendations for agency heads are in two main parts, sort of a short-term and a long-term approach. In Article 7, Section 11 of the Senate bill, the council recommends that MMB conduct an independent, comprehensive market analysis of compensation for managerial positions in the executive branch in order to better align compensation for these positions with comparable positions in the private sector and with other relevant public sector employers. The analysis should evaluate total compensation, including insurance, retirement, performance pay, and other benefits. The second recommendation is that, for now, the salary ranges of heads of state agencies be adjusted as follows. For the commissioners that are in what's called Group 1, their salary should be set at 133% of the salary of the governor. And for those commissioners in Group 2, we recommend that their salary cap be the 120% of the salary of the governor. The council also recommends, and it's included in this bill, that the governor be granted some greater authority in terms of salary setting when making appointments. Let me turn then to the final subject, legislative salaries, subject near and dear to the hearts of some here. It's obvious that the council's recommendation for the legislature has the highest public profile. In fact, we think an argument can be made that that's why the Compensation Council was created, in part to mitigate this issue by having mostly independent, citizen, non-elected individuals provide recommendations to these bodies. Indeed, Section 8 of the bill would take the matter further, but not entirely, from the hands of the legislature and have the legislature be like the governor and the chief justice and appoint representatives instead of members of their bodies. Simply stated, we know legislators are understandably concerned about the appearance of self-interest. The council certainly respects this perspective, but was driven by several factors in determining its recommendation. I should also point out that although we asked the legislature if anybody wanted to come testify on the subject, we found that nobody wanted to come and testify. So we made these recommendations independent of any input from anybody in the legislature. And I will note that our recommendations are consistent with council recommendations made in the past decade by other compensation councils before us. Number one, the council's charge did not include consideration of political interests when we discussed the legislative salaries. The second factor we think is significant is that the Minnesota legislature has not seen a salary increase since 1999. So that's 14 years, and by the time any salary increase goes in effect, it'll be 16 years, because there has to be an intervening election before any increases or change can take effect. The third factor we thought was important was that the role of legislators has become increasingly complex and time-intensive, thus affecting their availability to engage in other activities that would earn other compensation. Likewise, the factors of time and compensation have an influence on the state's interest in attracting candidates. And let me make a personal observation here. When I first looked at the salaries for legislators here, having not looked at them ever in my life, my first reaction is that there must not have been much change in those salaries since my father served as a state senator here in the 1950s. The last point we'd like to make is that Article 4, Section 9 of the Minnesota Constitution requires that the effective date for these increases has to be after the next election, because you can't increase your own compensation under the statutory scheme that's set. We have to wait for that intervening election. Given all these factors, the Council recommends that legislative salaries be set at 33% of the governor's salary. And I will note that this same recommendation was made by the last Compensation Council that met, which was the one in 2009. There was no Compensation Council that met in 2011. The same recommendation was made in 2007, also in 2005. So the last three Compensation Councils that met before us made exactly the same recommendation. Let me end with a few comments here. Whether it's the judicial, executive, or legislative branches, our Compensation Council and all of us see that Minnesota is lucky to have remarkably capable and dedicated public officials who are committed to serving the public interest. And it's in the public's interest to keep it that way by making sure government has the tools to continue to attract and retain the best there is to lead our state. Unfortunately, our state workforce is at risk of failing to meet this goal. Today, we have judges who earn far less than the county attorneys who appear in their court before them. Our state agency heads, many of whom run large-scale enterprises of thousands of employees and budgets with hundreds of millions of dollars, haven't seen salary increases in 15 years. And the same is true for the constitutional officers and those of you in the legislature. We think the time is now to consider these increases in order to preserve an important Minnesota tradition that we attract and retain the best leaders for each branch of our government. Thank you for this opportunity to appear here today. Mr. Schroeder and I are available to answer questions with the support of Mr. Hubinger and Mr. Lee.
Thank you, Chair Frazier. Mr. Schroeder, do you have any comments you want to make?
Mr. Chair, members, no, I don't. Okay. I have to work with Mr. Frazier to help prepare the comments and reflect on my interests as well.
Great. Yeah, you bet. Questions from the committee? Ms. James, would you fill us in on the Senate in Article 7 added two pieces in there, and would you fill us in on what those were?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, the Senate added two things. One, it removed legislators from the Compensation Council, and that is on page R5, section 8. And then it also indexed the governor's salary to inflation. And that is in on page R2, section 3.
Mr. Chair. Yes. Mr. Chair, that the, yes, the Senate position regarding Compensation Council membership for the legislature to have non-legislators. It was a position that Senator Rest introduced into your committee, you recall. Though we did discuss it briefly at the Compensation Council, we didn't take a formal position on it, but I think I can speak on behalf of the Council by saying we would all agree that that's a reasonable approach.
Very good. Thank you. Comments?
Mr. Chair.
Yes. Mr. Nelson. Looking at the, Nelson.
Thank you. Just looking at the recommendations, and I'm just down here where it's at the salary ranges for the heads of state agencies, and I'm looking at this group three remain at 25% of the governor's salary, and I guess I'm just, it just seems a little odd with the 133, 120. Is that accurate? Is that the right number, or is that a typo? It's the salaries of agency heads and under A. It's got group one, group two, and group three.
Okay. Mr. Chair, if I could perhaps
yes,
answer
Mr.
that
Short,
question. Representative.
Help us out.
And I guess the other question I have
okay.
with your answers is, what is group one, and what is group two, and what is group three? What do those entail?
Okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, sure. Thank you for asking. Group one are, in effect, the larger scale agencies. So, for example, the Department of Human Services is a group one. The Commissioner of Human Services is in group one. Group two are second tier, smaller sized agencies, generally speaking. And group three are agency heads, but for the most part, those are not necessarily full-time positions. So that reflects the 25%, but Mr. Lee can add a little bit more to that.
For the record, my name is Jim Lee. I'm with Minnesota Management and Budget. Group three is actually a single position at this point. It's the chair of the Metropolitan Airports Commission, which is a part-time position.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. Ms. James.
Mr. Chair and members, if you look on page R3, the section of the statute that identifies the group one positions is actually listed there. So you can see right from the Senate text that who all is included in group one. And then on the next page, on page R4, the section of statute that lists the group two agency heads is listed there, and so you can see there also.
Other questions?
So, what would the total cost be?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy, there's a fiscal note that is attached to the legislation, and Mr. Lee can walk us through that.
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair, total cost of the entire council recommendations or the agency portion?
And Madam Chair, did you want to... Each group, and did you want to include the legislature?
Sure.
All right.
I'd like to hear the total cost
okay.
of each group.
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair, maybe Mr. Lundeen can maybe find the name of this one. But,
I think if we go into the fiscal note starting on page 2 under Minnesota Management and Budget, that kind of lays out the costs associated with the state agencies, and then the costs associated with the legislature would be starting on page 6 of the fiscal note.
Fiscal 13 cost would be $650,000. Fiscal 14 would be $1.7 million. Fiscal 15 would be $1.8 million. 16 would be over $2 million. And 17, $2.3 million. And that would be the executive branch portion.
And I think it might be good to note the assumption there is a 10% increase. The salary ranges would actually increase up to 40%, but I think the fiscal note made that assumption.
Right. Mr. Chair, the Well, the salary limits would increase by 40% retroactively to January of this year. The assumptions were a 10% increase January of 13, 10% January of 14, and 5% each January after.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Lee, does your department have any objection, or did you volunteer to do that study that the Senate asked for?
Mr. Lee.
Representative Murphy, we didn't volunteer, but we are actually glad to do it. We do know that we need to have some analysis of the salaries and that part of our salary structure, and we welcome it. That's good stuff.
And you have the money for it?
The money is contained in this bill, Mr. Chair. The money is in the bill. There's $200,000 allocated for the study out of the total appropriation. And we have talked with Mr. Hubinger about the possibility of changing that to $300,000, which would not increase the appropriation. It just gives us access to a little bit more money.
Senator.
I'm kind of looking for the fiscal note. Is it in here?
No, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I just thought I was the only one lost here. Huh?
No, you are.
No.
While we're waiting for that fiscal note, are there any other questions?
Tell me again the bill, the number of the bill in the Senate. You said it was Senator Pappas?
Yeah.
1534.
1534. 1534. Oh, there it is. Senate file 1534.
And the House bill?
Madam Chair, did you have?
No, that's why I was wondering. Somebody referred to the House bill.
I'm sorry, Madam, Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy.
Mr. Short.
I don't believe there was a House bill with the Compensation Council recommendations in it. However, in the House bill before this conference committee, there are two provisions that address issues related to the Compensation Council. I'm sorry for the confusion.
Okay. Because Mr. Schroeder, our committee didn't have possession or didn't have the bill or the Compensation Council report forwarded to us. So we have no background except what you're given. And I heard that you were very persuasive.
Well, Madam Chair, Mr. Short has spent many years trying to convince legislators that the Governor Plenty was doing the right thing. So. And he did a pretty good job.
I remember seeing him in the halls. Mr. Chair, did you, in the Compensation Council, when you were discussing, did you discuss how your recommendations fit in with contracts that were being passed by the legislature, as they were being passed by the legislature?
Mr. Frazier.
We were aware of that, but we did not specifically relate one to the other.
But for as far as the cost go, Mr. Frazier, were you thinking about how the fiscal note for your recommendations would blend with the responsibilities of paying for the contracts?
Well, I think the most significant thing to us was the large interval that's passed since there have been changes to the compensation or to the compensation for the legislature and the executive branch and the judiciary, which is not before you today. And 14 or 15 years means there's a lot of catching up to do. And I'm aware that under the contracts, of course, the increases are a little more regular, smaller, but more regular.
Mr. Chair,
Mr.
Murphy, to answer your question as well, we did have a brief discussion on an acknowledgement of the contracts that were underway in consideration by the legislature at the time. I think it was Representative Benson raised at this point, perhaps Representative Holberg as well. But in the end, the council had to acknowledge that it was not within our purview, statutory purview, to be to put any weight on any considerations for those contracts. And as Tom points out, those are really independently negotiated by the administration on a routine basis, and the council's recommendations were independent of those. So there was an acknowledgement and awareness, but not any influence, if I could say.
Well, my general comment on this is that, and this is separating the legislature and the legislators. I mean, you know, if we don't want to raise our salary, that's our own fault. But I, after 16 years or 15 years, I think to stay competitive in the market we're in, that. The executive branch and the people who work for us probably need a change in the compensation.
Mr. Chair, not to go out on a limb a little bit here, but I would also ask you to consider the legislative increases as well. I think the council thought very carefully about that. We understand the dynamics that all of you and your colleagues in the House and Senate face, but you have the same dynamic, 15 years. There are factors that come into play that attract people to candidates to be candidates or not, and there are a lot of things that go into it. Service, of course, is the first thing, but we can't ignore the fact that compensation is a part of that equation. We think it's the council believes it's reasonable to consider that in your deliberations.
Is there anyone from the media here?
Watch
TV.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Mr. Fraser, Mr. Schroeder, did anyone from the media appear at your compensation council and make testimony at all?
Yes, I remember NPR and several TV stations and MinnPost.
Mr. Chair, to be clear, they did not provide testimony. They were there to watch us. And I know that Tom was on NPR. I was on Muriel Hammer's Almanac show. So there was certainly media interest, and I'm quite confident. I know that there have been a number of stories on the topic.
Thank you.
TV and radio.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Fraser, Mr. Schroeder, at the time that you were discussing these things and you were making your proposals, you said that there was no negative testimony. Was there positive testimony from some of the usual critics?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, I'm not sure.
Mr. Trump.
I have a lot of usual critics, I mean, personally, so that's a really big club. I can't say that I can think of any in particular, but no, there was no one that came forward that was critical of any of the recommendations for any three branches, and we had nothing but support from, I know we're not talking about the judicial branch here, but we did hear very clearly from the judges and their interests as well. There was a study that was presented to us by an individual from Calston on judicial salaries. We heard from engineers in the private sector
and the importance of having high-caliber, high-quality engineers in state service so that they can interact with them and be productive. As Tom mentioned, we also heard from Housing Finance, so a number of others. So I don't think we heard any negative whatsoever. I don't even think we heard a neutral.
Right. Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, I would also add that the votes in the Compensation Council weren't even close. There was a, some of them were close to unanimous in favor of these recommendations. There's very little dissension within the committee.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I just want to clarify one point.
Sure.
Just to be clear, on this legislative.
On the legislative, right. On the legislative, obviously, there was some concern on the part of some members of the council, but that passed by a very strong majority as well. In fact, virtually all of the citizen members voted in favor of the increase.
Madam Chair, would you like to introduce?
That would be helpful.
Fiscal note, can you help us with this? Mr. Lundeen?
Sure. Everybody should have a copy of the fiscal note. The first page of the fiscal note is kind of summarizing all of the costs that are contained in Article 7. The fiscal note was done on Article 7, not on Senator Pappas's original bill. If we turn over to page 2, this is highlighting the costs to the executive branch agencies. It's dealing with the general fund and then also the cost to the other funds. Now, the appropriation that we included in the bill just addressed the general fund appropriation. The feeling was a lot of the other funds are statutorily appropriated and so forth, or they're done through the indirect cost mechanism to pay the salaries of commissioners and so forth. So that's why we just focused on a general fund appropriation in the bill. And as was noted before, the numbers in the fiscal note were based upon a 10% increase in the salary. The language in the bill does allow the salary ranges to go up to 40%. So the appropriation that we were dealing with in the bill was based on the 40% number rather than the 10% number of the fiscal note. And I think as we page through the fiscal note, if you get to page 4, you can see the annualized costs of the 10% increase starting in fiscal year 13. And you can see further down on the fiscal note the impact to the individual agencies and how many employees in each agency are impacted. It's a total of 185 employees across the agencies listed. If we go on to page 6 of the fiscal note, you see the costs to the legislature. And as was noted, we did not include any funding for the salary increases to the legislature, although that is included in Article 7. Yeah, and one of the reasons for that was because the salary recommendations don't kick in until fiscal year 15, so we did not deal with them in the bill. And then as we move on in the fiscal note, there was also the constitutional officers also did fill out the fiscal note, the Secretary of State, the State Auditor, the Governor's Office, and those increases were included in the appropriation that we did put in the bill. So I don't know if there's any direct questions that someone has on the fiscal note, or
but Mr. Lundeen, the total appropriation is on the front page.
The total cost is on the front page based upon a 10% increase in salaries. The amount that we have in the bill is based on the 40%, and so that's why we have the $2.5 million appropriation in our bill.
Okay. Yeah. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Lundeen, You just about got to the question I was going toward and looking at the assumptions on page 3 and how that reconciles then with reconciling the, what you said, the 10% and the 40%?
Yeah.
And how, say that again, how we will reconcile that for the appropriations that we're talking about here.
Okay, so the appropriation that the Senate included in the bill, we didn't provide any funding for fiscal year 13. We started the appropriation with fiscal year 14. The assumption that we were using was based upon the 40% increase in the salary range. And we just looked at the general fund portion of that because the feeling was the other funds, there was enough flexibility or statutory appropriations to deal with that. And so the $2.5 million, of that amount, $200,000 is allocated towards the salary study that is in Article 7 that we discussed. So it leaves $2.3 million for fiscal years 14 and 15. It gives the commissioner of MMB the authority to transfer this money out to the agencies to be a base increase to the agencies. And then we also included $2.5 million in the tails so that these would be ongoing base adjustments and moving into the base for the next biennium. And also in the rider that we included, if the full $2.3 million was not needed to, you know, based upon whatever the salary increase, if the governor goes with the 10% of the fiscal note or goes with some different amount that's less than the 40%, the commissioner of MMB could then take any remaining dollars and transfer to agencies to deal with the costs of the contracts that were recently approved.
Answer your question, Representative Purcell. Go ahead.
Just one quick follow-up. So we would not anticipate that we would need more than the 2.3.
No. I think that would be sufficient.
Based on the assumptions that we're making.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. Mr. Chair.
Yes.
One additional comment Mr. Schroeder suggested. For clarification purposes, we mentioned that no one from the legislature came and made any requests or provided any testimony on the subject. I should, for balance purposes, also point out that no one from the governor's office or any of the constitutional officers ever came to the council and provided any testimony or made any requests. The other point is that one of our recommendations was that the governor be given more authority than he has now to set salaries within a range that's approved by the legislature in advance, so that once the governor has a range, he or she can set those salaries within that range without coming back every time to ask for approval from the legislature. We think that would be a significant improvement and for many management reasons.
Yeah, Representative Newton.
Just a general question. I don't know who can answer it, but won't there be a lot of upward pressure from assistant commissioners for pay raises for assistant commissioners if we jump the salaries of the commissioners up as high, especially in Category 1?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm sorry, Newton, excuse me, thank you. Yeah. You know, it's hard to say. I think that's not would not be it would be reasonable to expect that that's a possibility. The flip side of that argument might be that it would also be a good way to attract even higher and better talent. So I can't say that we would know for sure what the dynamic would be, but I think you know, nature loves a vacuum, or doesn't love a vacuum. So there's an argument that could be made that there would be some additional changes in that respect. I wonder, Mr. Lee, would you have anything to add to that?
Mr. Chair, a representative, in 1998, which was the last time the Compensation Council recommendations were adopted, there was a similar 40% increase or so in the salary limits. And the governor did move all the agency heads as far as he could with legislative approval, moved them to the new maximums. And we did experience a lot of pressure from the deputy and assistant agency head level. The fact that there is a study funded in this bill gives us the opportunity to actually gather some information about the values of the jobs, do some labor market surveys, and take our time making some adjustments instead of just reacting to the vacuum and making some intelligent decisions that we haven't really had the luxury of doing for the last 15 years. We're also taking the view that it took us 15 years to get to this spot. If it takes us another year to fix things, that'll be fine, but at least we'll do it based on data.
Yeah.
Well, Representative Newton, you bring up a good point, and there and the gentleman's observations did include the fact, yeah, salary compression is going to have its effect, especially after 15 years. Any other questions? Madam Chair, you look contemplative.
Oh, good.
Other questions for testifiers? Dot, we really do appreciate you being here.
Mr. Chair, thank you so much for your kindness and patience with us.
It makes more of a difference when these recommendations are presented by you who put them together.
You can now reach us if you need anything. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, Madam Chair, it's very possible that we need some time to look these over, because I'm not sure that there are certainly members of the Senate committee who haven't seen these before and probably could use some time to look them over as well as members of the House. So we've got that information now, and that was what I contemplated for this particular meeting. And so with that, I'll just kind of ask what you might be interested in tomorrow. Or when you...
I have a few things left, but I haven't. Have you been given any information on when we're...
The proverbial target?
Yeah.
No.
And I haven't either, although I did hear from a source that progress has been made. No. But I don't know if it's progress in relation to state government financing and the military affairs. But we're having... session at 10 tomorrow, and we're having a few bills, including legacy. So it's a day to behold, and more like today, I think. We'll see what happens.
Another one like today,
but Monday. But we left it pretty open that it would be at the call of the chair and time to be set, that kind of thing. So we will have that with the agenda.
We will wait to hear from you.
All right.
Thank you very much. Means adjourned. Thank you. Yep.